All right, welcome to another edition of the Fraudcast. We are live from the Fraud Quarters in San Francisco. This is your ear rapist, Ben. We have unprofessional Vince, who has raised his unprofessionalism to new heights.
Hello, I'm your ear rapist, but I'm not, but I'm unprofessional.
And we have Brett here.
Yep.
We have a really exciting Fraudcast this week. We have the one and only Perry Grip on. We blooped him in. We will bloop him in for an interview, which is really exciting.
In the future for you guys.
In the future. The creator of so many amazing internet jingles, as well as the former lead singer, or current lead singer, if they're still making music, of Nerf Herder.
Vince pretty much my hero.
Pretty much Vince's hero. We're going to bloop Lindy West in, and Vince and her are going to talk about Sucker Punch. And we can talk about how Vince is... only has a job because he gets to work from home and stare into a computer all day.
All right, let's get Lindy in on this conversation here.
All right.
Yeah. Answer the phone, Lindy. God.
Hello?
Hello?
Ah, hi.
Hi.
So loud. Scared the shit out of me, that ringing noise.
Yeah, you don't normally hear that, right?
Ringing.
I don't know what I normally hear. I don't remember.
Normally you hear the screaming of your own voice.
Yeah. Did you guys miss the screaming of my voice?
We did. Oh, Linda, you missed out. We had, like, my personal hero on the Fraudcast this week.
In
the future. In about 10 minutes, we're going to have my my personal hero on the Fraudcast, Perry Grip.
Lindy may know who that is. Lindy, do you know
who? I do know who that is.
Yeah. And so we were all set to go. We're all set to go about, 9 o'clock.
Hold on. Let's back this up.
This goes all the way back a week because we were supposed to have him on last Thursday.
Yeah, so he couldn't make it last week, and he graciously rescheduled, which we appreciate. And Vince sends an email out to the Fraudcast crew this afternoon like, hey, tonight, confirm. You got to be there, all right? This is happening. And Brett and I confirm and say, yeah, man. We'll be there with bells on and party hats blazing.
I showed up on time.
Yeah, Brett showed up on time, which is a rarity for him to.
I'm pretty important.
Brett's not very important, but he's also usually very late. and so it's we're supposed to start at a certain time, and we're supposed to start the interview at 9 p.m.
So Ben, I show up at 8:30, and Ben and I are drinking beers, kind of chilling, shooting the shit, wondering where Vince is.
It's like 8:40. Vince is usually here about 8:20, 8:30.
Yeah, yeah.
And
how on time am I usually?
Oh, yeah, usually you're the first person here, 8:20, 8:30 for a 9 p.m. start.
Have I ever been late to a single Fraudcast ever?
Not until tonight, which was arguably the most important one.
So Ben and I are both on our iPhones calling him up.
I sent him a couple texts like, hey, buddy. Hello.
Hey, buddy.
We're doing this at 9 o'clock and, 8:45. Hey, Vince, you on your way? No answer. Another one like, hey, Brett's here. We're ready to go. No answer until about 9:05 when I get a text that says, yeah, 9 o'clock.
So I finally get through, and on my phone, he's continuing what he just told Ben. He goes, yeah, 9 o'clock. And I yelled at him, said, yeah, that's the time it is. 5 minutes ago, what the fuck are you doing? And he goes, oh.
Sleeping. I'm rabble, rabble.
All right, so I did that thing where, you go drink. All right, so I went to go. My girlfriend works at a bar.
Oh, here's the truth.
And
the truth comes out.
It requires the Fraudcast to bring the truth out. He told us he took a power nap.
No, well, I did take a power nap. I mean, it was a drunk power nap.
You didn't preface it with 50 shots of kamikazes.
All right, so my girlfriend works at a bar. It was really nice in San Francisco today. So at about like 5 o'clock, I went.
The truth
I went
shall be.
I went over to her bar to drink a couple free beers, and
thousand.
I don't know if you guys have ever had Lagunitas.
Hairy
Eyeball. I thought it was just like a regular beer that had 5% alcohol or something. Apparently, it has a lot more than that. Because after about like two beers, I was like, "Wow, I am feeling really squirrely. I don't know what is going on here."
But let's have a couple more.
Let's have a couple more anyway. So I do that, and then I go home, and it's like, 6:30. I'm like, all right, And I set my little alarm, going to wake up at 7:15. And the next thing I know, like, I wake up because my phone is just, like, ringing off the hook.
God, why don't people leave
why
me alone?
Why won't people leave me alone? So I get up, and I'm like, I'm peeing with one hand and listening to Brett with the other hand, being like, yeah, whatever, Brett. And I look at my phone, I'm like, holy shit, it is 9:10, and I was supposed to have Perry Grip on the phone at 9 o'clock. So I immediately drop everything and jump on my bike to ride
which,
over here.
Which is his dick and the phone that he was on with me.
So that is my method of transportation is my bike to get over to Ben's house, which is about 15 blocks from my house. And I swear to God, on the way over here, I'm cutting through cars, and I knocked someone's rearview mirror off.
Side view.
Someone's side view.
That would be really impressive if you knocked their rear
mirror off. I knocked someone's side view mirror off on the way over here.
Like, sorry,
I was
bro.
Trying to cut through a mirror through the cars, and I just nick a mirror with like my handlebar, and I hear it clatter to the floor.
You know that could have ended about 15,000 times worse, right?
Yeah, it could have.
But
wait,
it
did you hit and run?
I did. Oh, I did.
Oh.
Perry Grip was on the phone.
Yeah, Perry Grip was waiting, Lindy.
I refuse to leave Perry.
He is waiting.
I refuse to leave
what
Perry Grip waiting.
What is Perry Grip going to have to say about your criminal ways?
Only you can listen. Continue
that
to listen.
That car is mad. That car is mad.
Yeah, that driver
that
is not happy.
That car is really, 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 really mad.
Wow.
Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, maybe he's a listener. That would be very ironic if he was actually a Frogcast listener.
I can pretty much set anything that happens into my life to a Perry Grip song.
Well, I think most people can, right?
That's kind of the point
of
what he does.
That's the
he
magic.
Says
That's
what
where the magic lives.
Don't ruin the magic, Lindy!
So Vince did make it over here in an impressive about 15 minutes, which is pretty good.
Less. I feel like we started. He made it over here in 10 minutes, which is
Mr. Volkswagen Jetta guy, whoever you are, I am very sorry about your side mirror.
Clinkle, clankle, clank.
I feel very bad about that, but God damn it, Perry Grip is more important than your stupid mirror.
Text you later, bro.
Yeah, pretty much.
Send me the invoice. Send it care of Fraudcast at San Francisco.
I'll business expense it.
Yeah.
Which means I'll tuck it under my mattress and then sleep on it.
Send it to the Bickle-esque cave where I reside and work and nap.
Just scrawl an unhappy face on the envelope. It'll find its way to me.
So, Vince.
One more quick story before I ask Lindy about Sucker Punch.
Yeah, just a question, though. Were you napping on the jerk-off couch?
Yes,
or
I was.
So that
can't
is,
sleep in the bunk bed.
The only
not after what happened there.
The only other time that I've done this was, I think I told the story on the Frogcast before, but as some of you know, I did have a brief television career on the grid for IFC.
And by brief, what would you say the total amount of minutes that you spent on TV?
Let's see. I think we shot 6 segments, so 6 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the worst part is the last one was my best, by far my best. I got to dress like Hunter S. Thompson and eat a pie with a buck knife. And that one's never going to air.
Oh.
What?
Can you get
Why?
That footage somehow at least?
It got canceled.
Wait,
we could just reshoot that.
Hey,
you can just eat a pie with a buck knife every day.
Hey,
you can do whatever you want.
But
Vince, someone's got a reel.
That's true. So basically one time, like when I first got contracted to do the show, they were like, oh yeah, we film on Tuesdays and blah, blah, blah. So like the first time I went down and it was on a Tuesday and it was great. And then like for my second batch of shows about a month later, they're like, oh, could you come down to L.A. on this date? We'll shoot some more shows, blah, blah, blah. And I was super excited. I was like, oh, wow. Like, my first batch of segments wasn't terrible enough for them not to invite me back.
Someone invited me back? That's
a
first.
Yeah, I was fucking shocked, basically. So I'm like, all right, great. And so I'm thinking, okay, so that's going to be in the net, 2 Tuesdays from now or whatever. Because, like, our first thing that we talked about was, oh, yeah, come down on Tuesdays, blah, blah, blah. And so, like, that week, I just doing my normal Monday routine, like
jerking off.
You know, I'm at a Chinese restaurant,
jerking off,
typing my regular thing. It's like 11 o'clock in the day, and just on a lark, I decided to look at my call sheet for the grid, and I pull it up in the email, and I realize it says on the very top of it, it says Monday, blah 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 blah, and I don't know if you've ever had that experience where like your entire face falls out of your ass.
You basically shit your stomach out of your butt.
Yeah. I was describing it to Ben, and I was like, you know when they do the thing with the depth of field where the background slides in on you really
it's
fast?
It's called a rack focus.
Yeah, I know. Ben he's like, hey, you know they're moving the camera forward as they're focusing out. And I'm like, Ben, I fucking went to film school, asshole.
And then he punched me in the balls.
I know how it happens.
So there was like a rack focus with me and a Chinaman, and I just start like, you know, I live in Chinatown, and I'm used to Chinese people like, you know, cussing and talking to themselves.
Not when they're in rack focus.
But it was this time it happened to be me in a Chinese restaurant where I'm the one like literally hitting myself in the head with my own fist screaming fuck, 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 fuck. And I was supposed to catch a plane down there at 9 a.m. And this was like 11:15 that I discovered that
that's about the same time
I had gotten dates wrong. So I'm like, fuck!
Wouldn't that be awesome? You should have texted them. Like, so hey, Vince, we're filming now. Yeah,
oh,
Tuesday.
I did text them.
Just tell them the time.
Yeah.
5 minutes ago. Yeah, five minutes ago.
Vince, you ready to shoot? On Tuesday.
Where the fuck are you guys?
I threw my shit in my bag, and I just ran out in the street and flagged down. Like, I was about to stop random cars. Luckily, one of them happened to be a cab.
Like Bruce Willis in an action movie?
Yes, exactly. You need to take me to the airport now!
Fake gun and all.
And a lot of people are going to die.
When you're a blogger and you get a TV gig, you're like, oh my God, my family's finally going to respect me.
Well, let's... When you're a blogger and you get anything that's in the outside
yeah,
world...
basically.
Half a sandwich. This half a sandwich is my big break.
When you get to interact with humans... during the daytime? That's exciting.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often.
So I flagged down a cab, and I ended up spending three-fourths of what I was going to get paid for the shoot on my own plane ticket to get down
there.
Hey,
you should have expensed that.
Yeah, well, I will. We got tax season coming up.
Yeah, we do.
But
what's the blogger tax bracket look like? They hit tax heavily, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tax bracket looks like the Final Four, baby. Just kill or be killed.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I live in San Francisco, and you can get health insurance if you make under...
If you're a blogger?
Yeah, yeah.
Blog insurance?
Let me just tell you this. My health insurance is really cheap. I spend less on health insurance than I do on, like...
Four Loko.
Than I do on a week of cable.
Well, you do spend a lot on cable, though.
Yeah.
You get a lot of spice.
So Lindy, I made you see Sucker Punch this afternoon, and I apologize for that.
Yeah, thanks, Dick.
Did you hate it as much as everyone else?
I hated it more than everyone else.
Wow, so you hated it the most.
I hated it the most. No, I don't know. I don't know how much everyone else hated it. I didn't read any other reviews because I didn't want to taint my own
taint.
I didn't want to taint my own taint. With the taint.
Brett and I
just went into it cold.
Brett and I abstained.
As far as I know, the rest of the world loved it. I don't know.
I don't think so.
No.
Maybe it's America's Sweetheart.
No.
Well, Lindy, this is what I heard. When I wrote my review, I got...
Wait, you're quoting your own review? Here's what I heard from the thing
I'm not
I just
quoting
wrote.
My own review, you dick.
Could you do that, actually? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, just whatever you were going to do, stop.
Could you read a quote?
And just here's what I hear from myself.
No. That's what Armand White does, whatever.
Seriously, can you read a quote and then say, vincefilmdrunk.com?
If I'm reading my own blog correctly, I thought...
I got a few negative comments from people who said that it was a really accurate representation of... the psychology of people who'd been molested. So have you been molested, Lindy? Like, I don't know.
I forgot to answer your email about whether or not I've been molested. You already emailed me today to ask me.
He said that.
That was so way before we ever watched Sucker Punch.
that was a long time ago, Lindy.
I just wanted to see whether you were a viable mate, first of all.
This is a long time ago. Can't you just bury it deep in your subconscious?
So Lindy...
Well, wait, what do you want me to say? What's a funnier answer? Yes, I have been molested or...
None of them are kind of...
No!
They're all kind of...
I was just curious because like the only people that have claimed that this movie is any... Like that makes any sort of sense at all were the people that they say it's like some sort of metaphor for molestation.
So people that got molested are just bragging that they're really good dancers.
Here, you want me to read you the comment so we can all be on the same page? All right. This is from EJ. I don't know who this person is. As a victim of child sexual abuse, I found the movie to be immensely entertaining. I realized how fucked up that sounds, but just bear with me. The movie as a whole seems to be hinting at a much uglier story that I feel they overexplain towards the end. The reality of what's happening as the plot progresses is likely something like this. After the protagonist finds herself in the insane asylum for girls who need to disappear, we're shown a few of the plot points that will come into play later. The movie then fast forwards to the end and doubles back into fantasy mode. While the movie is distracting you with happy place explosions and self-empowered fight scenes, Baby Doll is being raped repeatedly by the staff.
What?
She finally gets her revenge, and the only girl to survive the whole ordeal supposedly rides off in the sunset. For evidence, I submit the following. 1. Baby Doll's self-image as an adult and a whore. This is very common reaction from victims of sexual abuse, both with respect to seeing themselves as being older and more responsible than they are, and a tendency to blame themselves for what happened. 2. The superheroine moments. They only really come up when Baby Doll needs to dance for someone, at which point she retreats further into herself. 3. Mr. Pleasant as the owner of the club. The real orderly is just a low man on the totem pole at the sanitarium. But in Baby Doll's minds, he's God. He's presented as someone whom they both despise, yet someone who they're utterly terrified of rebelling against. 4. The vocabulary the gang uses when they're not in action mode. Really listen to the way they talk to each other and ask yourself, are these really grown women? I'm not saying all this to say it's a great movie, but it deserves better than to have, duh, I don't get it, to be the chief complaint. What I got out of it was that it was a neat action flick wrapped with a very dark and frank examination about the lengths children will go to escape the horror of their situation.
Wait, that actually made it sound like it was an interesting movie.
Nope.
That is the only thing that could make this movie.
That actually sounded like
that
an interesting
made sense.
Movie.
The
yeah.
movie did not make
hey,
sense.
Hey, so Lindy, Brett and I did not see it. Can you please play Lindy Explains the Plot? Because I think this would be a great movie for it.
So if I molest my kids, then they can fight a dragon?
Yeah, duh.
Is that what the movie's saying? Yeah, I will explain the plot. I can explain the plot to you.
Proceed.
Okay, wait, so nobody understands the plot? Vince, are you having trouble?
I did not. I wrote a review. I didn't really get it.
I didn't watch the plot.
To me, it was a big, boring sequence of dreams where, like, there was no consequences and everybody's just farting on my face.
Okay, so here's what
happened. Which he actually likes, ironically, but not in a movie form.
Lady farts.
Yeah, they blow your hair back.
Aww. Back and forth.
Queso.
Okay, let's see. Where to begin? So there's this, like, sort of Russian-looking woman.
She's Polish, right? Madame Gorski, okay.
No, I mean the main one. Don't you think she looks like I don't want to say. I feel like I'm about to say racist things.
She looks like someone punched her nose and broke it and smashed it on her face, basically.
And it came out her mouth?
Yeah.
No, she's lovely. She's great. Her mom dies, and then her mom's... So she's like sexy baby woman, first of all.
Yeah.
So her mom dies, and then her mom's will is like, I give all my stuff to my daughters. So then her evil stepdad looks at the will and is like, oh, no, no. This is not going to work, which I'm pretty sure is not how wills work.
It is. Any man can override a will at any time.
Boom, dragon.
Yeah.
So, right. So then, the only way, for him to get all the stuff, like whatever, I don't know what he wants. I guess they're wealthy or something.
Goodies.
Don't you watch TV? It's direct TV.
Wait, where are the machine guns?
No,
this movie.
Don't interrupt her.
Dragging.
Don't interrupt her.
You guys are only like 12 seconds.
Yeah, this is literally 30 seconds of the plot.
I was
right
promised machine gun robots with rabbits on them.
Shut your face. This is literally 12 seconds of screen time.
All right,
so far.
Hold on. Okay. So then he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll rape this little one. And then kill it for no reason. And then the other one, I'll take it to the sexy mental hospital. So, pay to have it stored there.
But to be fair, he doesn't actually rape either of them. He just, like, breaks into their room and,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, but I swear that in the trailer, they show him, like, unbuckling his pants. And they imply rapiness.
Well, but Lindy,
I had that in my head before I watched it, and then there was none of that.
We
all know the trailer is. It's only really what happens in the movie. That's real.
No. As I titled my review, the slowly twirling button of implied rape. Really, the only thing they did to imply the rape was the fact that he was trying to come into her room and he like rips her top button off, and then it's just like a slow motion shot of her.
That's pretty rapey, dude.
Yeah, it is, right?
Yeah, it's
completely rapey.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whatever. I mean.
So, Vince, you say rape?
Well, okay. Here's the deal.
I just want to know.
Here's the deal. If you want to imply civilian casualties. You film a fucking doll that's like half burned and it's still smoldering, and you're like, oh shit, we bombed an orphanage, yo. And you don't have to show anything other than that. And same deal with like a twirling button that's like bouncing on the floor in slow motion. That implies rape.
So the audience can get the catharsis without having to go through any of the ugly stuff.
Exactly.
Without seeing full penetration. What? Yeah. They're not allowed to show that.
That would have been
no, better. You're not allowed to show that. That's a great point. Are you the one that went to film school?
No, I didn't, but I'm just...
That's Ben. It's not Brett. Don't get us confused. I'm the one you like.
Brett had to go to film school.
I don't know what I'm just, I like.
I didn't go to film school. I made that up.
I'm just naturally smart.
I was joking about penetration, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, I wasn't. They're not allowed to show that. Did you guys not know that? Anyway,
okay,
proceed.
So
we made it... So they got raped.
They did. Okay, so then...
That's not funny, Lindy.
I don't know. Okay, fast forward, they're at the sexy mental hospital, and then they're like, just kidding, it's not a mental hospital, it's a sexy orphanage, also,
oh, yeah,
and also a sexy house of prostitutes.
Adopt a prostitute.
Wait, so yeah. Is there any...
So it's all three, so they're like, what we do is the orphans have to dance for the, and then have sex with the dudes, and also they have to... like be the janitor at the mental hospital also, but in their whore outfits.
So hold on,
that's the kind of business we run here.
Where does this place exist, and are they hiring for these janitors?
I don't know. It doesn't really make sense, but that's what happens.
Yeah,
because
all right,
really, it's like it's some of it's in her brain, and some of it's really happening, I guess.
So Lindy, to me, the hardest part to swallow was that Madame Gorski, who is the Carla Gugino, who is the psychologist, her job is to help the girls come up with fantasy worlds to escape their pain. And the girl in question comes up with... she escapes her pain of a mental hospital by inventing a fantasy whorehouse, which doesn't seem like
wait,
something.
Is this whole movie just a slutty return to Oz?
Yes.
But wait, hold on. Who hasn't invented that, Vince?
Well, basically, I mean, it starts
I mean, who of us has not done something... exactly the same while in a slutty orphanage.
Yes,
I'm serious.
Oh, man,
I can relate.
If I could count every time that I got molested in a slutty orphanage, oh man,
you run out of fingers in a heartbeat.
I would have enough money to get a butthole transplant
and adopt a sexy prostitute.
So Lindy, did you laugh as hard as I did and everyone in my theater did when like this is my
explained the plot and none of those were robot bunny
wait,
rabbits.
I'm not done explaining the plot.
This was my favorite scene though.
I hope it involves a robot rabbit or a dragon. I was told there were dragons.
There were. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Lindy, but my favorite scene was when Baby Doll, who is the main character and where all this is going on in her head, they get her to dance. And she is in a 40s brothel at this point. Basically, she's gone from this house where her stepdad murdered her sister, and they put her in this mental institution in the 40s or 50s at the latest. And from there, to escape from her pain, she's imagined a whorehouse, as you do.
As one does.
And inside this imagined whorehouse, Madame Gorski, this Polak, is like, says to her, she's like, you're gonna dance for the high rollers. And she's like, okay. And so Madame Gorski goes up to like a reel-to-reel player, and this is like, you know, this is in the middle of a 40s brothel, and it's all very...
So like they only have like a Wii and not a PS3
lovingly
or something.
Created. So she goes up to the reel-to-reel, and she hits play, and when the music plays, it's this fucking electronica song of Bjork.
Big in the 40s, bro.
In my theater, everyone laughed. What was that? What was that like for you?
Well, there was no one else in my theater because I had to go by myself on a Wednesday afternoon.
See, Vince, she gets to go to a private screening.
No, it was not a problem. I mean, I had to pay $10.
That's a really good deal, Lindy.
It's not a good deal.
$10 for a private screening? We don't get that in San Francisco.
We don't.
FYI.
Yeah, it must be great in New York or Seattle or wherever the fuck you are.
Yeah, up where you live, $10 rents you a whole theater. Down here, that's not even one ticket.
Well, so no one laughed.
Did you laugh?
No, I wept. I don't know, maybe I laughed.
Were you confused when that happened? Please tell me you're confused.
No, because it's like fucking what's his name's like
dumb
steampunk jack-off fantasy. Like obviously it's not real. I wasn't really like paying attention to, I mean,
it's a weird thing to get hung up on, Vince.
It's 1940.
I'm with you.
No, it's not. It's not a period piece. They're not.
It is. It was like, a period piece.
That's an inaccurate lamppost. The suspension of disbelief is broken for me. He's got fucking dragons.
How is it not a period piece?
Because I haven't had them explained to me.
They go to medieval times and they fly around in an airplane.
But this scene was not in medieval times.
Wait, so Lindy,
not to mention, I can understand if you're in 1945 and you're like dreaming up a dinosaur scene. But you're not going to be dreaming. You're not going to be dreaming up a Limp Bizkit song. What the fuck?
It never said that they. It never said what time period right. the
Bjork is without era. She exists permanently.
So, all right, you guys, hold on.
Bjork exists out of time.
Just to give you an idea.
With her swan dress.
So just imagine Carlo Gugino queuing up a reel to reel, and this is the song that plays. Listen.
Oh, I like this song.
It's 1940 and this song's playing. I fucking shit you not.
I like this song.
Yeah.
It was just another super fucking corny thing that he came up with.
A couple things. So it's well known, Vince, that Bjork has gone back in time.
Also, the
multiple. And so, Lindy, I just want to let you know that Vince took a 3-hour nap today. And Andy drank a can of Four Loko. So
To wake him up.
So he's on like a he's sort of in the dream.
She is on my wavelength right now. She agrees with me on
this. I understand where Vince is coming from. I mean, it's ridiculous. It just is in the middle of so many other more horrifying things.
And like for the record, World War II started because of that Disturb song. It's just how history plays out, man.
Yeah. That's why the bodies hit the floor.
What?
Okay, I'm going to continue with the plot.
All right, yes.
Balkan powder keg.
What?
Please, go ahead.
Okay, Madame Gorsky is like, baby doll, now you dance. And she's like, okay. So then she does dance. And by the way, you never see her dance. Because every time she starts dancing, then she goes into a fantasy land full of dragons and orcs.
Describe that part.
Well, let me fucking talk.
But do it hot.
I just wanted to say that it's irritating that, like...
I actually didn't mean to do that. Sorry. Go ahead. That was accidental. Sorry. Continue.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Are we done?
No. Keep going. I swear to God, I didn't mean to actually play that. God,
I'm a little tempted to call into like a sex line now and be like, describe the part with the orcs and the dragons. not the part about the sexy dancing. Tell me about the robots.
So basically she goes in there and then first she has to like fight like samurai demons. Who's that dude? He's a Carradine or something. Who is that guy?
I don't remember. He's
the wise. There's like a wise.
He's leathery.
Mystic, a leathery mystic.
A wise old leathery man.
And he's like, you need five things. You need these five things to escape. You need a map, a fire, a knife, a key, and then ? The fifth thing is, you know,
which is hard to obtain.
? Is a big old dildo.
Harder to obtain than one would think.
You need
the whole time.
Red key.
I was just like, it's gonna be your vagina. Please don't be her vagina.
Fuck me boots. It's got to be fuck me boots.
So then she goes back to regular land and she talks to all the other whores, the orphans, and she's like,
oh.
Orphans.
Boom, like, made the podcast worth it with that one quote.
And she's like, you guys,
no,
I have
no,
a
no,
plan.
Hold on. Lindy, that's not what she said. She said, other orphans,
friends,
listen.
Countrymen, fellow orphans.
He goes, you guys, yo, I've got a plan to get out of here. And they're like, no, you don't. No one could ever come up with a plan to get out of here. She's like, no, I have it. And then she goes, here's my plan. A map, fire, a knife, a key, question mark. And they're like, oh, my God.
And they're like, oh, my God, she's a genius.
Wait, oh, baby doll, you're the simplest of all the orphans. This is a great movie we're in. High five.
Gather around, orphans. I've got important news to share.
Before you got to that point, I thought you were just making like Italian jokes. Hey, gather around the fellow orphans. I got a plan for you. Hey, I'm making the meatball and I get you out with. I got a map for you.
Hey, orphans, don't listen to that Polak bitch.
She's a mama Luke. Don't listen. So, don't listen to this dirty mama Luke. You're making your mama sad.
You listen to me.
So then they're like, so Abby Cornish, Abby Hornish is like, you guys, I don't know about this plan because it's not a plan, obviously. And they're all like, shut the fuck up. We're doing it. So then, they're like, what we have to do to get all the stuff is like, just have baby doll do her sexy dance and then everyone's hypnotized. And we can, like, steal fire and a knife or whatever. Okay, so then...
Wait, is this all a metaphor?
I don't know.
Okay, so the whatever...
And so then she goes back... They go back into Fantasyland, and, like, the next one is they have to fight, like, zombie robot Germans in World War I. That's with the robot, the rabbit thing, the rabbit dude.
Is it a good rabbit? Or a bad rabbit?
No, it's like a big robot, and that chick that was on The Real World rides in it because she's a real actress now. I don't know if anyone
else
knows
the Asian one.
I didn't want
the Asian one that was on The Real World.
I didn't want to bring this up, but I was one of my first jobs was as a production assistant on The Real World San Diego. And
is that the one she was on?
Yes, it was. I was a dailies editor on The Real World San Diego,
which basically equates to you editing out their ball sacks, right?
I'll say this.
Buttholes.
You can't show either of those things. So Vince's job is to take the scenes with their balls and their buttholes out of the clips.
I know of a lot of stuff of The Real World San Diego that didn't make it to air.
Mostly buttholes.
And it was mostly pretty dirty.
Mostly Brad probably having sex.
There was
about the Asian
Brad,
chick?
Yeah.
You know what my feeling about her was?
Her name was Jamie, I think.
Just
Jamie,
Brad?
Jamie her name's Jamie.
Yeah, her name is Jamie Chung. First of all, I don't like how all of a sudden it's okay to name your child Jamie J-A-I, because in my town that was Jaime.
Yeah, but you know where you're from? Not America.
Yeah, okay, regardless. Her name's Jaime. But anyway, my main impression of Jamie Chung was that she was really dumb because she was from California, and I remember her being somewhere in San Diego and being like, couldn't spell the Spanish name of the place where she was.
Ironically, and her name's Jaime.
And I was like, dude, you're from California. How do you not know that? Anyway, it was a crazy time in my life.
So which?
Okay, so she flies around in the rabbit, the rabbit thing.
Rabbit vibrator.
And then the rest of them fight the zombies, mm-hmm. and then they get the map. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then her dance mm-hmm. ends, and they cut back to the
dancing mm-hmm.
to the orphanage,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's mm-hmm. crying. You never see any of the dancing, which mm-hmm. makes me insane. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're gonna make all of the mm-hmm. villains weep,
mm-hmm. how did this make you feel?
Which part?
What you just described?
No, just let her. She's weeping, the
sorry.
Crying and the
sorry.
Weeping.
All right. Mm-hmm. Continue.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys psychoanalyzing?
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all.
Oh, and so when they're in the battle scenes, because it's like everyone else is like a robot that they're fighting, and then
tell us about the battle scenes.
Five chicks in underpants, and it's just like so condescending. Like the leather man is there being their general, and he's like, "Listen, ladies, it's not going to be a tea party, and don't worry because they're just zombie Germans, so don't feel bad when you kill them.
I like that. I forgot about that, where there's this, just this guy who spouts these, like, condescending one-liners where it's like, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Whereas if that was your commander where you're about to go, like, fight zombies, you'd be like, dude, just tell me which direction the zombies are coming from. Don't give me any of this, like...
Would really love some intel on those undead, sir.
You know what I want from you, dickhead? Duck. That's what I want from you. I don't need you. You are not Kant, okay? Just tell me where the bullets are coming from.
Oh, and they always have like a lollipop or something also. Let's not forget that.
That's right. A big lollapalooza with the pigtails.
Super sexy. Okay, what's next? So then the next thing they do is they have to get fire. So they go to dragon. They go to medieval times, and they have to like kill a baby dragon, which is sad.
It's also a lot harder than one would think.
Well, yeah, you got to go to the clinic and make an appointment.
Okay, so it was sort of supported, like the whole like fire map key, blah blah blah. Like if you watch the very first 10 minutes of the movie closely, it does tell you, like, all right, this is what she needs to escape the mental hospital, like fire map key, blah blah blah. But then when they go into like
blah blah, it's a
wait,
question
does this
mark.
Whole movie end with a crazy person being released onto the streets?
Well, here's the
yes,
deal.
Yes, it does actually.
Yeah,
into modern
exactly.
times,
it really does. Yeah,
when
it does.
A Bjork song well, does exist.
Here's the problem for me.
Stand tall.
Here's the problem for me. Any work of fiction is essentially a dream. It's basically like me saying, here's what I dreamed. Here's what I dream fucked ooh. Into your brain.
I don't want to see Vince's dreams.
Uh-uh.
Basically, it's
all.
Like, I dream fucked this story into your brain.
It's Inception, and, but with semen.
And you accepted it because whatever I dream fucked into your brain, like, it made sense. And then, but then Zack Snyder's like, oh, no, I can't be bound by the normal rules of dream fucking. We're gonna need to cancel out gravity and people dying, and I need more leeway in the dream fucking. So then he has this story, and then it's like, oh, it's not actually the story. She's gonna dream half the story, and then it goes into like three dream levels that don't make any sense at all, other than the fact that oh yeah, they're just floating around in space and they're gonna shoot each other.
Yeah. Well,
you're being really judgmental of her dreams, bro.
Sorry. Yeah.
Mine are pretty straightforward these days.
Yeah, Brett goes to work.
Oh,
in his dreams.
Dude, with the sharks? Fuck with the sharks.
Okay. I'm not all done right. explaining
she's
the plot.
She's not done, Brett.
Yeah, we're tired of this movie,
shut up.
Though.
Shut up. Shut your face.
Tired of this movie.
Okay, Jenna Malone gets punched in the face by a robot.
Who's
in
Jenna
slow
Malone?
Motion. Remember that part?
Yeah.
Wait, the robot's Laotian?
That was good.
The robot's okay. Laotian?
All right, correct me if I'm wrong. Jenna Malone.
What?
I mean, she's not the hot. I mean, I'm not saying she's bad looking or anything, but she's
kind of
not
bad looking.
She's not the most attractive girl I've ever seen, and she's a terrible actress. And I'm just wondering. I don't know.
I think that she suddenly looks 100 years old. I don't know what happened.
She does look like a Faces of Meth. Like you can.
She is the world's greatest grandpa at this point.
Yeah, she's very shiny, and like you can tell, they got her acne covered over with like an inch of pancake makeup, and then she's got like the pebbly.
Oh God!
Meth
they have
teeth.
The one guy with the knee pads just troweling it, just like troweling on the foundation.
And
like,
a little
have.
Kid.
Hey.
A little kid by like. Steps on it and shows up while the kids
with the little kid when he writes his name in her face.
Yeah. In the makeup. All right, Lindy, let's finish up. I want to know how
okay,
the movie
I'm
ends.
I'm almost done. Sorry, what? What?
I want to know how the movie ends now. Now I'm enthralled.
So then they have to get a knife, and the fantasy sequence that is the knife is they have to like get a bomb and put it on a helicopter.
That doesn't
so,
sound like a knife.
And then the secondary fantasy sequence at the orphanage is they have to steal a knife from the cook, which means that baby doll has to do a dance, a sexy dance in the kitchen. So anyway, and then Vince, did you notice that dialogue when Abby Cornish comes in and Jenna Malone's like, are you here to help us? And she's like, no, I'm here to keep you from getting killed. Like, yeah, that would be helping.
Yeah.
Good job. Good dialogue. Zach.
Abby Cornish and Emily Browning were the only two passable actors in the entire thing.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. It was horrifying, all of it. Okay, I'm trying to remember. So then basically what happens at the end is everyone dies, much to my delight.
Woo!
They get murdered one by one. And then at the end, Baby Doll and Abby Cornish are finally going to escape. And so they go out in the yard, and then there's some dude standing there. And so then Baby Doll's like, I have figured out what is the final thing. It's me. You have to go. I will distract them with my vagina. And so then she goes, and it's like, you could just wait until those dudes move. Like, she like...
No.
But instead...
Nope.
Instead, the final key... The fifth key to her escape is her not escaping.
She's the Glonesy McGlone of this heist.
Well, she,
hey, I always loved you, bro.
She's the fifth.
You are so queer.
Look here. Here's the deal, Ben Affleck. My life was never as important as yours. You got a winning lottery ticket, and it's not going to be you. It's not going to be me, and especially the queer parts.
So two things. One, Vince had a huge fart right in the middle of that little soliloquy.
I farted. Look here.
She was the fifth vagina mint.
Glonesy McGlone likes to fart sometimes, okay?
When he's dying, all right?
When he's dying. He's dying around here.
Is that Christopher Walken?
What happened there?
And then the badger has got a nice pot roast.
Wow!
So have you heard that, Christopher Walken?
So we're gonna come confiscate
he's got a badger in his ass, and the only way to lure out the badger is with a nice pot of roast.
You do a horrible Christopher Walken. If Brendan were here, he would shit his pants with hate.
Brendan,
you had a good point in your stupid review.
Hold on. Well, Brett, you know who that was. That wasn't Christopher Walken.
What?
That was Christopher Boston.
I've already repressed that memory. With the it being an original work, and I kind of feel like an original work from a dumbass might still be better than a derivative
work.
It's
true.
Right?
I was impressed that it was not a graphic novel. This was just – I was impressed that Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures are like, oh, dude, Zack Snyder, you got an idea about these whores in an orphanage and you just like want to do it. And you're like,
you
oh, go for it, bro.
No, we've been waiting to make a orphanage period piece for years.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it
a orphanage period piece.
Hold on. So, Zach, quick question. This is important. If we're going to greenlight this,
make it a period piece.
We need to put Bjork in there. Can we do that? If we can put Bjork in your period piece.
Oh, God. Stop saying period piece.
Then it's a green light. Zach, we have a deal? We got a deal, buddy. We got a deal. That's how Hollywood works.
Oh, God. A orphanage period piece called Red Dawn.
That's a really bad... That's a bad channel on YouPorn right now.
Or Red Tube.
Wow,
Brett. Thanks for playing.
But also, I would like to respond to the idea that it's maybe good because it's not derivative. Because it's the most fucking derivative... uncreative thing I've ever seen. Everything is just a thing that he took from another thing.
Well, it's like a mashup made by an idiot in his basement.
I did want to point out the badness of the music, where it was, all right, so the music for a movie that's set in her head is Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
Yeah. Did you know that One Pill Makes You Larger and One Pill
Where
makes
Is
you...
My Mind and White Rabbit? It's like, dude, if someone had written a song called There's a Chick in an Orphanage Who Dreams of a Whorehouse, he would have fucking put that song in there.
Underrated song, by the way.
Sweet dreams are made of whores. Who is she to imagine a whorehouse?
That's
some of them want to rape you.
Some of them just want to fuck you.
So then at the end...
Wow.
So then at the end, Don Draper comes and he stabs her in the eyeball with an ice pick right into her brain.
And everything makes it okay.
And then you're like, oh!
That's the worst part about it is the fact that like you sit through like this hour and a half of inconsequential crap. And then at the very end, they make you feel like, oh, maybe maybe I missed something.
Also, you know what was funny to me is at the end when, right after he does the lobotomy, and then he's like, why did she look at me like that?
Because of the ice pick?
Yeah.
Well, wait. So, Lindy,
I've never had a stupid whore that I lobotomized look me in the eyes before.
Well, no, but normally the
she looked really mad. That's what he says.
The only
she looked so mad, I just had to kill her personality with a spike to the brain.
Oh, God, it's the only movie this year where you'll identify with the ice pick.
That's it. You are the ice pick.
All right, we went way too long because I don't want to make this podcast super long because no, yeah, we talked to Perry we're gonna talk to Perry for about a half hour, so I don't want to kill this. We're good, right?
We're good.
All right.
Are we good, Ben?
We're good.
Are we good, Lindy?
Lindy, are we good?
We're okay.
Lindy, I would love to talk more.
Top Chef finale, so thanks a lot.
Who do you think? Who do you think, Richard? I mean, I'm a Blaze fan. Yeah.
Lindy, if it's not Richard, I'm gonna.
Lindy, have you heard of this new technology? It's called the digital video recorder.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Do you really not?
No, I make like $200 a week. Are you kidding?
Lindy, you know that's like an extra $15
so
a month.
You're so famous. You had your review like pumped by Roger Ebert. What the fuck?
Yeah, you don't get money. You don't get royalties on tweets.
Yes, it turns out you should.
Lindy. Holy shit, someone's been living a lie.
Lindy, you need to start writing a blog because clearly you're a much better writer than I am, but you've been wasting your talents.
Wait, I wasn't going to say anything, but... Do you have a high-definition television or do you have one of those old 3,000-pound TVs?
Well, funny story. Until like 2 weeks ago, I had like a TV the size of like a paperback book. And then I thought it would be a good idea to have some people over to watch the Oscars with me. And then and one of them was my British friend, who apparently is wealthy.
Oh, he's bringing over the gold, he has!
Yeah, he emailed me the next day and he was like, I'm buying you a new TV. What's your zip code? And I thought he was joking. And then he was like, your TV is unacceptable. I'm sending it to you.
Yeah,
he was like, Lindy, I have literally hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, wow.
And then he sent me a new TV. Now I have a gigantic TV.
I don't know if your British friend's an awesome person or kind of a dick.
No, he's an awesome person.
No.
He's awesome.
Giving the gift of TV is a magical, wonderful thing. Yeah. All right, Lindy, thanks for coming on. And now we have the exciting, fun interview with Perry Grip.
All right. Well, we are here with Perry Grip.
The one and only Perry Grip.
Yes. My hero, basically. So, Perry, at some point, I don't know, maybe like about a year ago, I was listening to, I think, Hamster on a Piano, and I was rocking out thinking about how much I liked it. And then I looked it up, and I realized that the guy I was listening to was the same guy from Nerf Herder, all of whose albums I owned, and it all made sense. And now I get to talk to you, so this is a pretty exciting moment for me.
It's exciting for me, too.
I bet.
I don't get to talk to a lot of people, so this is exciting.
Is it mostly animals, or is it mostly the microphone?
The people that I talk to?
Yes.
mostly animals.
So I guess that's as good a place to start as any. How did you first start? When did like the YouTube video, the songs out of YouTube videos first start?
Okay, I'll tell you the story. So of course I was in this band Nerf Herder, which you must be the only person that owns all the records. That's true. We were on a major label and we made videos and we're on MTV and we did all this stuff. And it was, you know, I knew from doing stuff for, you know, being on the radio that it's really hard to sell records. And after Nerf Herder was sort of over, I wrote this song called Do You Like Waffles, which is really not a very well done song. And I didn't spend a lot of time on it. It was really kind of a joke. And a friend of mine made a little video for it and it went on YouTube and became really popular and has since then sold a lot of songs. And it was clear to me that you could sell a lot more songs being on YouTube with something silly than making records and being on a big record label. So that was sort of the inspiration for me doing all these YouTube videos. Not so much for selling songs, but just, you know, it's like, it was like something to do. And I, you know, I thought, oh, maybe people will like this. So it, that was how it got started.
And that was how long ago?
That was like, well, actually, Do You Like Waffles? And the video was before YouTube. But once YouTube started, like, I think 5 or 6 years ago, that was when the song took off. So that's a really long, boring story.
No, not at all. I think the story I heard was that, like, I remember hearing, like, I'm Sorry and Van Halen on the radio. And I definitely bought that album and, like, the next couple. But the story that I heard was that you guys actually asked the label to be dropped yourself. Is that what happened?
That's true. And what had happened was we were just some dudes playing in our garage in Goleta, which is a small town in California. I don't know if you know where it is. And our friend Joey Cape, who has been in a band called Lagwagon, he's also from our town. He was starting a record label, and he wanted to put out a record, and he asked a couple of bands, and they turned him down, and he asked us, and we said, okay, we'll do it. And he made this really cheap record, and the song that had the song Van Halen on it, that kind of took off on radio, and so suddenly, you know, we hadn't even played outside of our town. We got signed to this major label, and they put out our record, and some people liked it, but it didn't do really well. I mean, it sold less than, I think, 60,000 copies, which isn't really good for a major label record.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And so when that record was done, which was pretty quick, like, usually, you know, they'll sort of throw it at radio, and then if it's not selling, they'll say, we need to try again, or you guys need to do something else, or we need to drop you. But anyway, they said, you guys need to make a new record, and so we started writing songs, and we wrote a lot of songs. Like, it seemed like we wrote, like, 40 songs, and it was kind of the classic thing where they say, no, we're not really hearing any singles, and about this time, a lot of bands that we knew were getting dropped from labels and or just getting sort of held on the label without anything happening. And,
is this like 97, 98 at this point, 99?
It was 97. Uh-huh. Well, it's probably like early 98. And it was, I think, a really bad time for a lot of bands and for labels, too. So we kept writing these demos, and they weren't liking them, and we thought, oh, wow, we could end up writing demos for like 20 years and never, ever having a song they liked. So we just said, we knew we could go to Fat Records or Honest Dons, which is on mm-hmm. Fat Records, which is part of Fat Records. We knew they would put out a record and then we could do like touring and stuff like that. So
Mike's from NoFX's record label, yes?
Yeah, exactly. And so we asked to get off the label. And the crazy thing about it was before they would let us go, I had to personally talk to Clive Davis, who's this really, I don't know if you know who Clive Davis is, but he's this really like gnarly famous, he basically owned the label we were on. He's like a really famous old time music guy. And so he had to call me up and say, you know, Perry, I'm just calling to make sure that you're really want to be off of the label and that we'll be on good terms and that you won't say anything bad about the label and that you will, you know, continue to have a good feelings towards the label and that you'll basically, he just wanted to make sure we weren't going to like,
you weren't going to write a record called Fuck Arista or something.
Yes. Which is fine. I mean, actually they were really nice to us. It wasn't really their fault that the record didn't take off. I mean, it just wasn't really the time for it. Although the funny thing is we were like a pop punk band basically. And it was just like before Blink-182 came out. Mm-hmm. And they were just like at Arista, they were just like, oh man, this kind of music you're playing, this is totally over. Like, people aren't going to be into this. Like, you should really try to sound like Matchbox 20. And then like we got off their label and like Blink-182 like happened like the next day or something.
Well, crazy. You know, record company execs are geniuses, right?
Oh yeah. They sure are.
And so all this time, were you just in Santa Barbara all this time?
Yeah, we just, I mean, all of us sort of stayed in Santa Barbara, and it's nice here. It's kind of near L.A., so we could go to L.A. if we needed to, but yeah, we didn't go anywhere. We really sat around a lot. Actually, we did the theme song for Buffy, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually was great because we got some money, and so with
which is,
that money,
which
we
is always
sit
nice.
Around. I mean, we have nothing to show for it now, but it was, we were able to just sit around and do nothing for a while.
But so there was no like money sort of agreement when you were leaving the record label. That was just sort of you guys, you know, not wanting the responsibility of getting them to approve your songs, basically.
Yeah, and also to be able to put out a new record. Like I think initially when we approached them about getting out of our contract, they wanted us to pay them, which was really crazy. But a lot of bands, if you get dropped, they usually give you some money, or like if there's a settlement out of your contract. And we didn't get any money at all.
Wow. And so, it's weird because I feel like there's a lot of great music sort of happening towards the middle 90s, towards the end. And then as it got into like 98 and 99, it all just went to like all the major label stuff went to like the most terrible
well, the most terrible the money things. Is.
Yeah, it was weird. So did you guys?
That's actually what happened. Is that they were you had sort of this like grunge thing happen, like Nirvana and stuff, and record labels just went crazy. And there's like, we gotta sign like any weird band with a funny name or something. And they signed all these bands. We were definitely part of that signing spree where they signed like any crazy stupid bands. I mean, we probably never should have been on a major label. We would have been better off being on a indie label, but they signed all these bands, and then at some point they're just like, oh wow, no one's buying this stuff. And so they dumped all the bands. I mean, we didn't get dumped, but we were really part of these kind of like alternative bands leaving the major labels, and the major labels just went pure like, let's get the
Limp Bizkit,
like, whatever we think the kids are going to like, and you know, mass produce it kind of thing. So it really did change at that time what the labels were putting out.
Yeah, that's one of our what was this bar game that we were playing about a year ago where we try and remember bands from the mid 90s that only had like one or two hits, because I remember trying to get our friend Brendan, who's the other guy who usually does this with us, I was trying to get him to remember this Super Drag, Who Sucked Out the Feeling, which I think was about the same time as like Van Halen and I'm
yeah.
Sorry came out, and he looks at me confused, and I try, you know, I like sing him the melody and he doesn't get it, and I just remember there being a lot. It's a great bar game to try and remember bands from that era that sort of had one song or two songs, and then it's sort of like everything sort of changed. It was really weird. I can't really figure out what happened still.
That was a great song. I love that song.
I do too. I sing it for him, and he just looks at me confused, and then I get angry, and then I sing it more angrily, and it doesn't help anybody. So were you guys just friends from Santa Barbara? Like, I mean, how did that? How did you guys get started? Was there, you know, was there an idea behind the band, or were you guys just friends playing music?
It's kind of a small town, Santa Barbara, and so there was like a little. Just like a group of musicians, like people that would hang out, you know, the music scene. There were a bunch of different bands, and everyone would just go see their friends' bands. And so pretty much everyone was in a band. You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like what everyone just did for fun. And so I was good friends with Steve, the drummer. And then the other guy, Charlie, was like a little bit younger. And I don't know how we met him, but somehow we all started playing, and it was pretty friendly at first. Of course, later on in the story, it becomes very confrontational and bad, but Steve and I are still friends. I'll say that.
That was what I was going to ask you. There's a lot of shifting. I didn't read about you guys other than like buying your albums, but I just noticed that there was like a ever-shifting lineup. What was that like trying to sort of keep a band together?
Well, it's tough because there's like money things, like, especially it's kind of harder when you're when you're sort of at this, we were at kind of an awkward level. You know, it was, we were able to make a living at it sort of, but, it wasn't great. So there was real concern with people getting money, and, it was just, I don't know, you know, it's a lot of weird. I mean, if you've ever been in a band, it's like people generally in bands are sort of like, you know, maybe not the most well-adjusted people in the first place. So you end up with a lot of weird personalities, and then you put everyone in a van for 12 hours a day, and things get sort of tense. So I guess there's, I don't know if that's a good explanation, but yeah, we went through a lot of bass players, basically.
And so wait, was Charlie or Steve the bass player? I'm trying to remember. Sorry.
Charlie was the bass player, and okay. Steve was the drummer.
So,
and Steve thought up the name.
Oh, Nerf Herder, really?
Yes.
It's a Star Wars reference, right?
Yes, yeah.
That's yeah, what... and it wasn't cool. But I mean, not that it's that cool now, but back then it really wasn't cool.
Well, I feel like that's what made it cool was, like, you know, in the mid-late 90s, like, not every single person was trying to, like, wear their coolest Star Wars graphic tee to show how down they were with the cause, whereas now they kind of are, which leads...
It's a lot more acceptable.
Yeah, which leads me to my next question, which was about the song you guys wrote for Attack of the Show. How did that come about?
Oh, that song, the Girl at the Video Game Store song. Is that it?
Yeah, yeah.
With Olivia Munn in the video.
Exactly.
That song is kind of a... This is sort of after Nerf Herder, and I put out this little record of little short songs, and the guy who had the label who put it out said, oh, you should do a record that sounds like Nerf Herder, but it's just you. And so I thought, oh, that's an okay idea. So I wrote that song, and then I realized it wasn't a good idea at all. So that song sat around until...
So you wrote that on your own without them at all at first?
I did, yeah. Okay. I just wrote it. I actually, I wrote it. I was trying to buy a Wii. Did you own a Nintendo Wii?
Yes.
Yeah. You have them? Okay. Yeah. So I don't even really play it, but I'm just like the kind of guy that's like, oh man, everyone's buying this thing. I got to get one. And so I would, I was working on this record for Hallmark. It's like a kid's record called Hoops and Yo-Yo. I'm working on this record, and my sort of system of working is like I'd work, you know, late into the evening. I'd wake up in the morning. I'd take the things I'd recorded. I'd put them in my car. I'd drive to Starbucks, buy it, you know, I'd listen to the music I'd worked on, get a cup of coffee. I'd walk to the video game store and see if they had a Wii, like right when they opened, so that I could get one if they had it. I probably did this for like, you know, a couple weeks before I got one. And I would go in there, and there was this girl who worked there, and I'm kind of older, so like the idea of like if I was in high school and there was a girl working at a video game store, I would probably like have been like really fixated on her just yeah. because that's just the kind of, you know, nerd I was in high school. But so I'd go in, and like every day I'd be like, hey, so do you have a Wii in yet? And the girl every day would be like, you know, you could just call, or we could call you when they come in. And I was like, no, I just like coming in, right? And so I figured, oh, she probably thinks I'm really like this old creepy guy, which may be true, but like trying to hit on her, which wasn't the case, actually. And I did get the Wii eventually.
Yes. I'm sure Success. She's used to people being so uncreepy at the video game store.
Hey. Perry, my question is more about sort of where you find the either inspiration or do people send you the videos for the YouTube songs that you're doing now, or is it stuff that you look for, or sort of where how do those come about?
People send them to me now. I mean, originally when I first did like Hamster on the Piano and Cat Flushing a Toilet were kind of the first animal ones I did, and that was just like. I started doing the song of the week, and I needed subjects for the song. So I was looking at YouTube and I thought, man, people really like these hamster, this hamster video or this cat video. And I was sort of Guilty. Making fun of it, but it turned out that people liked it. So I kind of kept doing it. But like Baby Monkey and like Paul the Octopus were ones people sent me and said, hey, you should do a song for this.
Yeah, I have
so
to
I
say,
do take requests.
I have to say that I really, really, really enjoyed the Heidi the Cross-Eyed Possum. What was that a choice to have possum with two syllables instead of three? I've always been on the fence about how I should pronounce that.
I don't know. Is it possum or is it opossum?
I don't know. I mean, I know it's spelled I looked it up. Basically, on the Western Hemisphere, it's spelled opossum. I don't know if it's pronounced opossum, but like a possum without the O in front is like in Australia for those marsupials, whereas the opossum is the giant rat things that live in California. I'm still not sure how you're supposed to pronounce it, to be honest. Yeah.
Thanks, Vince. So, yeah.
It would actually be a huge bummer if I was saying it wrong. I guess it's possible.
No way.
I don't think I can re-record it.
Yeah. I've never pronounced it opossum. Have you ever pronounced it opossum?
No, no, but maybe I should start.
No, that's really formal.
What's the backstory on this comes straight from your Wikipedia page, so feel free to think I'm as unprofessional as you want. But what's the backstory on the Santa Barbara Orchid Estate? Do you run that, or how does that work?
That is my family's. Well, it's basically my dad in 1957 started an orchid nursery here in Santa Barbara. And it's still around. My sister runs it. I was kind of running it for a little while before I could sort of escape doing music and stuff. I actually used to live in, it's sort of a big dilapidated, have you ever seen a glass house that has like glass for a roof and then there's plants under it?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a greenhouse. And then I used to, for a few years, I actually lived in the office, and I would wake up and there would be like a Japanese tour group, like looking in my window.
Yeah. I actually took that tour in high school or in elementary school. I've been there.
That's Brett. He's from Los Olivos. So he's, yeah, he would be.
Oh, you've been to Santa Barbara Orchid Estate?
I feel like it was fourth grade.
Interesting. And Los Olivos, that's right near here.
Yeah,
that's
it's
a nice
like
30
30 minutes north.
He's not Japanese though, so he's part of a different tour group.
Yeah, not that tour group.
It was a different group
that disturbed you from your office, but a different one.
Los Olivos is really. Oh wait, I get it confused with Los Alamos.
Yeah,
but Los Olivos is nice.
They're both very clean.
Where's the Quackenbush Cafe?
That's Los Alamos. That's right by my dad's house.
Actually. Oh, I like that place. That place is nice.
Yeah, it's good. They got good food there.
Oh, Los Olivos is like in sort of near San Ynez, right?
Yeah. We all go to the same high school.
Oh man, I'm really stupid. I mean, I lived here my whole life. I don't know that stuff.
I have to admit, this gave me like a conception of your life where like you'd go and lead like orchid tours and then you'd go back to like this giant room that had like, you know, Moog synthesizers and like a giant wall playing like YouTube videos. I don't know if this is too fantastical.
That's really accurate. That's very close to what my life is like.
What is your day to day like now that you're doing the internet thing? Is it different from when you were doing standard band stuff?
It really is. Actually, the schedule is really different. Like basically, if you're in a band that plays and tours, your hours are like you go to bed at like 5 in the morning and you wake up in the middle of the day and
just in a pile
that's
of
sort
sluts,
of that
right?
Rock and roll hours. And yeah. I get up at like 7 usually. Make some oatmeal. pretty exciting.
So is the songwriting process now you get inspired, someone sends you a video, you like it, you feel there's a song to be had, and then is it usually a pretty quick turnaround, or is it something that maybe takes you a couple days to get it down to where you like it?
Well, if it really varies, but if it's a really like I mean, the weird thing is, like, you'll have an idea for a song like Space Unicorn or something like that. And Space Unicorn, I remember it was in the morning, I was making oatmeal, and then, like, I'm like, Space Unicorn, hey, that's a good idea for a song. And literally, like, a couple hours later, it's done. And so that's an easy one. But then sometimes you'll get I've got this song called Dog Licking Cheese. And I've got this great video footage of this dog licking some cheese, and it's super, super funny. It's like the best video I've ever had is the dog licking cheese.
Mm-hmm. That's saying something.
I've been working on this song for months. Like, I've literally, like, just about finishing this song. I've been working on it for months. And it's like, oh, this song's not very good. I got to write a different song. This video's so good. So I'm, you know, it really varies.
So if it's a really good video, you feel like you have to do a really good song to justify this great video.
That is, that makes it sound too good. No, that's not true.
All right.
It's more random than that. There's no rule. It's just whatever happens. It's terrible.
Is that a big component of it? Like, do you think, like, when people have a memorable video to tie it to, that it makes the song more memorable or more, you know, do you think it makes it a stronger memory in people's minds when they have a strong visual to tie the music to?
I don't know. That's interesting. I don't really know. I have no idea. I actually don't even know why people watch it. It's really a mystery to me.
Because they're great.
I have a coworker.
I've got to thank you for all your plugging of my videos over the time. It's been very nice.
You really don't really have to thank me, because I would do it anyway. Yeah, just because it's. I mean, it's very, like, if you could. I don't know. It's one of those things, if you just put someone's interest in a blender and have, like, a robot, like, pull out, like, the perfect sort of essence of all their interests, I feel like that's what your songs are for me.
Well, I've got to get this robot.
I have a coworker who just wanted to – I introduced him to your internet videos, and he said, just thank Perry, because he had a bad day today. He's like, I put Perry's songs on, and it just put a smile on my face. It just makes me happy, and I think that's sort of how I would think a lot of people feel, so – I definitely appreciate it for that.
That's very nice.
So, well, Perry, thanks for coming on. I think if everyone, they should know where to find you, which is go on to YouTube. And then what's your website for the listeners out there?
It's perrygrip.com, or just Google Perry, or I don't know, somewhere on the internet.
Are you eventually putting like all the recent songs onto a CD the way you did with the... like the last batch? I forget. I'm not sure how long ago that was.
I don't know. I don't necessarily see the point of it, because CDs are like, I don't know. I don't buy CDs anymore. I don't know if you do, you still buy CDs?
No. Vince sometimes.
Vince still buys,
buys
tapes.
No, it's not often, I'll be honest.
Are you doing live shows with the internet? Are you doing live shows with the internet stuff? Are you doing live shows?
I did one, I performed at South by Southwest a couple of years ago, or last year, and it was really fun, and it was great, and I really enjoyed it, so I'd like to do that. I haven't quite figured it out, and if I did do that, then I'd want to have CDs just to sell something.
Yeah.
But hopefully, well, and you guys you're in San Francisco?
We are.
Oh, I'd come up there. That's like a good place. We'd play at the bottom of the hill or something.
Boom.
I was going to ask you about the Sportsman's Bar, but I suppose it's a little late for that now.
Oh, I can tell you about it.
Please tell. I mean, I have to admit that I definitely, I mean, it's not like Santa Barbara's like a foreign country for us. I've been there like 1,000 times, but pretty much every time I go there, we have to go to the Sportsman's Bar.
Was that where Yvonne got locked in the bathroom?
Yes.
Was that the Sportsman's Bar?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's awesome.
Could you tell us about that, or could you tell the people that maybe haven't been there?
I don't know who Yvonne is.
Yeah, you don't have to tell people about her. I can do that.
Just about the bar?
Yeah.
Oh, the bar is just some like old. It's just like one of those crusty old. They actually made it nicer. Someone else bought it, so it really isn't the same. That's what I have to say. But it was just this bar that everyone would hang out at and get drunk at, and it was sort of like one of those bars where you're kind of young and you go in there and you hang out because there's old drunk people there and it's funny. And then, like, pretty soon, you're like, you're the old drunk person.
Yeah, so that kind of life.
Oh, that's the best kind of bar. Well, Perry.
Well, that's it.
Thank you so much for talking to us. Yeah, I don't want to oversell it, but you're definitely like my hero. And you know, if you ever wanted to write one of your songs about the Fraudcast or about our website, I mean,
there would be no complaints. That's
yeah, there
a
would
fact.
Be no complaints. Let's put it that way.
So like film drunk on a piano.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Vince, put away that boner.
Why have you not written about Lobster Dog? That's my only question.
About what?
Do you not know about Lobster Dog?
I don't know what Lobster Dog is.
Lobster Dog is this corgi who wears a suit made out of a lobster. Well, it's not made out of a lobster, but he's a corgi with a lobster suit, and he is pretty fantastic.
I'm gonna Google that as soon as I get off the phone. Lobster Dog on a film drunk. Born dog.
We would not be offended if that happened. I'm just putting it out there. But thank you so much for talking to us. This is pretty much my favorite interview that I've ever
done. Yeah, it's been great. Thanks, Perry. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Good night, you guys. Night.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Thanks to Perry. Thank you very much, Perry Grip, for coming on. Thanks to Lindy. Thanks, Lindy.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
And Brett, take us on out of here.
What about me?
Good night and good chins.
I'm still here.